Hello, listeners. I'm Allie, and this is Quad Pro Quo. As always, I'm joined by my three co-hosts, Tammy.
Hi.
Matt.
Hello there.
And Guido.
Hello.
We are a film podcast inspired by the quid pro quo scene in Silence of the Lambs. Each month we pick a theme, and each week we pick a movie that falls within that theme. And we are starting the theme for May, which is Mother Lover Month.
We are mother lovers.
Yes.
We love our mothers.
We do. Each of us is going to talk about a movie that was picked by our mommies.
For better or for worse. I mean, you can't really pick your mom.
I don't know. I feel like that your mom's going to take offense to that.
I didn't mean it like that.
It came out that way.
It did.
I mean,
you said it.
I said it. You're right.
I mean, in
reverse. I thought you were going to say, you can't pick your mother's picks.
You can't pick your mother's picks.
Yes.
But you could pick their nose.
You could either be great like my mom, who has great film tastes. You know, I love her so much, and or she does great picks.
You could be Caro.
I think he's going towards me. He's looking at me.
I was going to go, that's my channel, the Sci-Fi Channel.
My mom does love the Sci-Fi Channel.
Allison, I was just watching Ice Spider 7. This time they went to the moon.
So it's either the Sci-Fi Channel, anything with Gerard Butler.
And Gerard Butler was there. Air Force One crashed into the moon.
Yes.
And then they had to save the president from there. But Gerard Butler was able to do it.
Didn't like Civil War. Went and saw that with my dad. Did not like it. Well, and then she Gerard likes that
Butler,
other guy.
Because Gerard Butler wasn't in it.
She likes this other actor who she knows the name of.
Denzel Washington.
No, Frank Grillo. So he's usually a supporting actor. He's in one of the Purge movies.
He's in Captain America, Winter Soldier,
yes,
and Civil War.
She's like, Allison, Frank Grillo's in it. I'm like, why do you know his name?
He's a budget Barenthal, and you know it.
Yes, he does kind of look like John Barenthal. Yes, she
loves
him too.
If only he had gotten into the MCU a little bit sooner, he would have been a great Punisher.
Yeah. No, he would have been a subpar Punisher, because we already have a great one, and it's Barenthal.
That's true.
You know who Carol's is of that same genre?
Who?
The guy from The Wedding Date.
Oh,
Everett.
Dermot Mulroney.
Dermot Mulroney.
At least my mom. Like how Cinda's channel is the Sci-Fi Channel. My mom now apparently is Turner Classic Movies.
That's a great channel.
It is. So you know, it's
Clark.
She loves Gone with the Wind. That's the one thing that I said. I actually did give my mom stipulations for this month. I was like, no,
it can't be four hours in length.
Well, it's Gone with the
Wind.
It's five hours, a lot.
Isn't it?
It's four, and there's an intermission.
Well, don't worry.
Wait, how many VHS tapes were they?
There were two of them.
No, it was two.
It was just two. I'm saying this now, but also knowing because my mom has been saying she's listening to the recent episodes first. So by the time this one airs, I will probably get multiple texts correcting me on how many VHSs.
Okay. Yeah.
So at least two.
I used to take Mimi to see it at the Colonial every year, and there's like an intermission in the middle. So like I would say it's at least 4 to 4.5 hours. Yeah.
Yes.
And
on Turner Classic Movies, it's
no, they don't have five. Commercials yeah, they, on Turner
yeah,
Classic
they,
Movies.
Yeah, they don't have commercials. No.
TCM doesn't have commercials.
The only thing it literally has is it just has the introduction by, you know, it used to be Robert Osborne, right? But he's since passed. But now it's whoever's
it's Mankiewicz.
Like,
it's Ben Mankiewicz.
Ben Mankiewicz. So, like, that's literally all it is. Then the movie comes on.
There's an overture, too. Like, yes. It's like a cinema. It's an event.
It is an event. Yeah. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a great movie. But just since that's her favorite
movie. It's one of my
favorites.
I love it so much.
It's basically the equivalent of Tammy's Shawshank Redemption. She would always have it on.
Yeah.
Or, like, your Jaws. Always have it on. And I just got tired of watching
yes.
it.
Yes. Well, before we get Tara. To Tara's the name of the house. Scarlet.
Tara.
Scarlet.
My mom loves the Hallmark Channel.
See, I feel like yes, my mom does sometimes have terrible taste in movies, but at least she doesn't like that shit.
My mom will watch the Hallmark Channel as much as we watch, as much as you watch the Bravo Channel.
Yeah.
What do you
Hallmark,
mean? You
Lifetime.
I don't
no.
have it on all
what
the
about,
time anymore.
What about your mom, Guida? Does she watch like? If, Hallmark or Lifetime, I feel like that's her wheelhouse.
No.
No?
If she's not watching Meet the Fockers, she's watching a Netflix show that ended a decade ago.
No, okay. No, no.
Oh, no, wait. Isn't
what
she...
What channel does she have on in the background?
Isn't it...
It's Super Foxy Fox. So
she's, oh, OAN?
So she's always watching OAN.
Oh. One American Network?
Yeah.
Oh, so she probably also watches that other channel that, like, Gilmore Girls is sometimes on, and it has, like, those Christian-y Christian shows.
Oh,
like,
Up?
Up, yes.
They sent her a jacket made out of red hats.
Freeform. No, Freeform is what, like, the W, or what,
No, it used to be ABC Family.
ABC Family. Now it's Freeform, and it has some racy stuff on it. Up is, like, Gilmore Girls is sometimes on it, but they'll bleep out stuff.
They'll be like, oh, that guy is Up? Beep. Meaning
the
gay?
Sad movie?
I feel like Gilmore Girls is too progressive for her.
It is quite progressive. Well, they bleep out some of the more progressive stuff, but... before we get to my mom's pick, we just want to address a change in the podcast. You may have noticed that we no longer have the intro from the Deluxe Edition Network, and we also don't have a commercial or trailer from one of the other members. We have left the Deluxe Edition Network.
No big deal.
No BD. BD for some people, but not for us. And
it's just different strokes for different folks.
And I don't like that stroke.
We were ready to part ways anyway.
Yes. To be honest, yes.
We've been talking about it for a little while. And
thank you for allowing us to be a part of the network. Met some really fun people, but we're just going to fly solo.
And we'll see you around.
All right.
And we have made many a good friends.
Yes.
From being on the network.
Yes.
And we hope to keep those good friendships.
Yes, absolutely. But we're going to do our own thing. Okay. So, let's get to my mom's pick.
Okay.
Are we going to do the questions at the beginning or the end?
Well, the way that... I mean, I'm just looking at my notes for next episode.
Yeah, why are there so many?
Can we do them at the end?
It's multiple pages.
I kind of do my, like, at least in my notes, I did my introductory spiel... I did a little talking on my own stuff, and then I get into my mom's stuff.
Okay, so at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so standard kind of practice. We all have a movie we're going to do. Last movie, or last episode of the month, we're going to rank all the movies from favorite to least favorite, and we also are going to answer some questions that we asked our mommies about why they picked this movie and everything.
But also, like, with your mom's pick, and I feel like with my mom's pick, they're very... And even Guido's mom's pick as well. I think Tammy's is the wild card because not a lot of people have seen that.
Yeah.
But like,
agreed.
Our moms have all picked movies that everybody has seen, I feel like. So if you haven't seen it, we're not going to do our usual like, and then
I'm not
this
doing
happens.
Scene by scene.
And that's what I said in my notes too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my mom's pick, also my mom's name is Cinda, just to let everyone know.
What year was she born?
She was born in 1957.
Ooh, you did it.
That was the same year my mom was born.
I know. That's why
you
said,
called her out.
Other than the political beliefs, they probably would be very good friends.
Wait, your mom was named after the character from The Battle for Endor?
No.
Sindel?
That's Sindel.
Oh.
Dork.
That's so
With
no, my mom's name is cool now because that's Tina Fey's character's name in Only Murders in the Building. So,
Well,
no, she always used to either be called Cindy or Linda. Still happens, or they think it's Lucinda, but now her name's Cinda.
I used to think that the most obscure name I've ever heard with someone that I've had to interact with was Katricia, but then I met your mom.
Yeah. Okay.
With a K?
No. With a C. It's like Patricia, but with a C.
Well, my mom, who was born in 1957.
She's a Heinz.
Oh, yeah. So her pick came out in 1982. It was directed by Ridley Scott. It's based on the novel Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick. And it stars Harrison Ford, Rucker Hauer, and Sean Young. It is Blade Runner, the theatrical cut.
I need your deck. This is a bad one. Worst yet. There was an escape from the off-world colonies 2 weeks ago. 6 replicants, 3 male, 3 female. They slaughtered 20.
A Blade Runner's job is to hunt down replicants, manufactured humans you can't tell from the real thing.
What's this?
Roy Batty, probably the leader.
There was just one outfit making replicants that superhuman, the Terrell Corporation.
Mr. Deckard, Dr. Eldon Terrell.
I don't get it, Tyrell.
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto.
So cool.
And the Philip K. Dick novel came out in 1968. I've never read it. I'm assuming Matt has.
I have.
Okay. So before we get to talking about this movie, we'll go around the room. Had you ever seen this movie? I would also like to say that I have not actually watched this movie from start to finish in one sitting. I've seen the whole movie, but never in one sitting. Tammy?
I had seen the newer version.
Oh, 2049?
Yeah, 2049.
Okay.
The sequel, the sequel, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sequel, yeah.
So I had not seen this original version because sci-fi is just not... Obviously, my parents watch Hallmark, so it's like...
True.
Sci-fi is not the genre. My dad was either watching horror...
Love.
Or...
Michael
nothing,
Douglas.
Nothing.
Horror or nothing. My kind of house.
He had like... He was the same. He had like five movies that he would watch on repeat, and... That was it. And mom didn't really watch TV.
Okay.
She watched like Melrose Place or something.
Love.
So yeah, so I had not seen this.
Okay. Matt?
Splitting hairs here. Because, you know, Ridley Scott is one of those directors where he's like, oh, well, I wanted to do this in the movie. So I went back and I re-edited it and I put it in a new case for you and a new... Like, I've never seen the theatrical cut because people that, like, have seen it before me when I was getting into sci-fi movies and stuff, they're like, no, don't watch the theatrical cut. It's garbage. Watch either the director's cut or the final cut or all that. So then at one point, like, you know, I was going to Best Buy looking to buy a DVD. I wanted to buy Blade Runner. It had, like, the four DVD set where it had all the versions in it. But you could only get the final cut that way. So I've seen the final cut, loved it. And again, I've said before, this is because I, like you said, obviously Matt read the book. I did read the book. This is one of those...
I don't think I said it like that, but that's
well,
fine.
Yeah.
It came through.
This is one of those movie where I will say I prefer the movie over the book.
Okay.
It's so... don't read the... I mean, Philip K. Dick is great, but don't read the book. Watch the movie.
So you hadn't seen this movie?
I hadn't seen this version of the movie.
Okay.
I was interested in seeing it because, again, like I said, so many other more hardcore nerds before me have been like, no, don't watch that version. But, hey, if Cinda likes it, it's got to be terrible. I mean, good.
Guarantee you this is the only version she's ever seen. Guido?
I don't like Philip K. Dick.
Why? Because his last name's Dick.
No... I read the Valis trilogy, and it's just like, this guy is on speed and acid at the same time.
This
and
guy...
It's just so clear to me that this guy is on too many drugs.
Okay.
But regardless, I love this movie.
Okay.
I watch it all the time with my dad.
Okay.
On our Trinitron tube TV, and it was badass. And I have... I'm not going to get into all the different
cuts. You have
cuts.
It on Laserdisc, don't you?
I do have it on Laserdisc. Dude, I have it on Betamax. Get the fuck out of here,
oh,
of course.
Oh, my God.
So,
can I ask, which version did we watch?
You watched the
in
final.
Prep for this.
I wasn't going to get it. You watched the final cut.
You
didn't
watch
there
the
were
theatrical
different.
Cut?
Whatever. Whatever.
Oh, well.
Are you going to tell me the differences?
No.
So, I can.
No. We're just going
to
go through the movie, okay?
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
I'm sure they can't be much different.
No, actually, you'd be surprised, but we're not going to... Don't go into it.
We're not.
Okay.
I don't want to.
How about
it's
the
pedantic.
Very...
No.
At the very end, can no. I at least... Can I do like my...
No.
Actually.
No.
Yeah, can I go full actually? We like...
No. I said no.
This is my movie.
Okay.
Fucking fascist.
So the budget of this movie was $30 million. This movie is actually not considered a box office success. It's also not considered it's a cult classic. It's considered it's kind of like The Thing. The Thing, when it came out, was like kind of panned by critics. Not a lot of people saw it, and now it's considered one of the greatest horror sci-fi movies ever made. Blade Runner is very similar to that.
It made
$41 million, so it made its money back and a little bit more, but not a lot. It wasn't really well received by critics. They thought it was confusing and weird. And it's just not... Now it's considered one of the greatest sci-fi movies ever made. But again, when it came out, it was not.
I couldn't believe how many movies in my mind that were running through my mind that were so similar to this.
But after Blade Runner.
After
yeah.
Blade Runner.
That were influenced by
Blade Runner.
So it
really paved the way for
oh, it
a
did.
Lot of...
It absolutely
storyline.
Well,
yeah,
when you think about it, this is like the Peeping Tom of
yeah.
its... Cause
you see so much.
Peeping Tom was like a... It came out around the same time as Psycho.
Yeah, it was kind of like the first...
And it was like a sleeper slasher movie that, you know...
It influenced, like, Black Christmas. It was the first, like, point of view of the killer that you saw. But everyone thinks of Psycho being that. Like, but really it was Peeping Tom. But, yeah.
Yeah.
No, every time they, like, showed the outside of where, like, the creator lived, like, the office building, I was like, this reminds me so much of Stargate. It reminds me of, like, all these different, like, sci-fi movies that came after Blade Runner.
I remember the first time that we watched... The first time I watched it, I was with our friend Randall. Shout out to Randall.
Hey, great seeing you, Randall. Yesterday.
We did.
We got.
He's so tall.
Thank you so much for my birthday present.
Oh, yeah, your Matchbox cars.
So cool.
We partook in some left-handed cigarettes.
All I'm talking about.
We started watching that movie. And then when we saw, like, the eye and the building. We were just like.
Okay. All right, so I'm not going to go scene by scene. I'm going to do kind of an overview, and we're just going to talk. Okay?
Yeah.
So, it's 2019, which is now the past. In Los Angeles, former police officer Rick Deckard, played by Harrison Ford. Obviously, you know him as Indiana Jones, Han Solo. So, he's detained by Officer Gaff, played by Edward James Olmos. You don't know him from stuff. Stand and Deliver, probably the most
Battlestar Galactica.
Yes. And he brings him to Deckard's former supervisor, Bryant, who is disgusting and...
Hey, you leave the guy out of Harry and the Hendersons alone.
There's also, by the way, a voiceover in the theatrical cut by Harrison Ford, which I will admit, I enjoy the knowledge because it does just kind of jump you into a world that you don't really know. So I do kind of like the explanation. But he is so awful at it.
Yeah. Tammy, I saved your life.
He sounds so... there was no voiceover in yours?
No, there isn't. Okay. In the final cut.
I wanted her to like the movie.
It sounds like he has a gun to his head while he's recording it. He sounds bored and annoyed. So he sounds like himself, which is what Harrison Ford is always.
For me, he sounded like he was like trying to be Philip Marlowe. Like he was trying to be Humphrey Bogart doing it. Like doing the voiceover narration of a, like...
You said he sounded like John Wayne.
Yeah, I said he was trying to.
Oh, okay.
But then he came off like, well, then, Pilgrim, here's what I did. My boss, I'm gonna go hunt these replicants. Replicants are these robots that look like people there, Pilgrim.
Yeah, you get, like, an explanation, which I don't mind the explanation. I just wish it was done with a little bit more zhuzh.
To me, it sounded like he wanted to do it alone, but someone said, no, I'm going to watch.
So there's a lot, like, another reason I like this movie is because of all the gossip behind the scenes and all the shit that went down. There was a lot of, like, he didn't want to do it, he hated doing it, Ridley Scott liked it, and then he hated it, and the studio wanted it because no one knew what was going on, and the studio made him do it. It was a lot. Like, this movie was fraught with drama. Ridley Scott and Harrison Ford... hated each other.
So wait, you're saying
did not get along.
Harrison Ford hated being in a movie that added to his pantheon of lore.
Yeah, I know. He's such an asshole.
Apparently,
the last 2 weeks of the movie, they didn't even speak whilst filming. Like, Ridley Scott, they had to have someone, like, talk between them, basically, because they hated each other so much.
Wow.
I'm like, super profesh.
Do you think it was Rutger Hauer?
Could be Post-it notes.
Probably.
Could be worse.
Rutger Hauer. It was just probably so dreamy and nice.
It's like Tom Sandoval and Ariana.
Ugh.
Is that the guy with the white fingernails?
And yes. Rutger Hauer was the Anne.
Right.
Poor Anne.
Okay.
Poor Anne.
Except she didn't want to work for Ariana. Or she didn't want to work for Tom.
I wouldn't want to work for anyone on that show. Anyone.
I'd work for Lisa.
That's just so you could, like, peep on her.
And also, I could use her house for special events. Be like, hey.
Like Sheena Shea.
Can I choose my sperm donor in your garden, Lisa?
Excuse me, Lisa. The Steelers are playing the Ravens on Sunday this weekend. Can we watch it on the cliffs of Villa Rosa?
That'd be amazing.
Dude, you would be her Pomeranian.
She could put her finger in me.
Ew.
That's okay.
God. That's the first time you've ever said that.
Yeah, you never asked me to put my finger in you.
Well, you're not Lisa Vanderpump.
I offer quite
They're
a bit,
also
though.
Quite pointy.
That's true.
Ow.
Yikes, dog.
The claw.
The claw.
It's not funny when women do it.
Anal claw fingering.
Ew.
Okay.
That's where my poop goes.
So Deckard, whose job as a Blade Runner was to track down bioengineered humanoids known as replicants and terminally retire them, we put quotes around that, is informed that four replicants are on Earth illegally. Deckard begins to leave, but Bryant ambiguously threatens him and Deckard stays. The two watch a video of a Blade Runner named Holden administering the Voight Kampff test, which is designed to distinguish replicants from humans based on their emotional responses to questions. I feel like I would fail that test because it was weird, and I'm not a replicant.
Hey, no,
what do you got against turtles?
You come across a turtle on the stage.
You wouldn't flip it. You wouldn't flip.
Would flip it over, but I just feel like.
Then what's the problem?
But I feel like the question, like the replicant was asking, like, what desert? It doesn't matter. Well, then don't make. Then just say a desert. Then you're walking in the Sahara Desert.
Wasn't it more about like the pupillary response?
Just
to the question. Can't they just show?
I don't know.
You loved it.
Pupillary.
You loved it in Ex Machina. That's basically the same thing.
I know, I love that.
It was called the Turing test at that time.
No,
that
I know, I did have a fact about that, but
sorry.
Thanks. So the test is supposed to determine if they're human or a replicant, and we can tell because of their glowing eyes, which I asked Matt because I wasn't sure if that is really just for the viewer or if everyone can see that, like in the world.
Oh.
Or is it just for us?
I think it was
just for the viewer.
Yeah, I think it was just for the viewer. What do you think?
Because on the test, his eyes weren't really glowing, so I wasn't totally sure.
I think that Decker could see it
because he's a replicant. Mm-hmm. You don't actually fall into that category.
Oh, come
of people
on!
Who believe it? Do you?
Did you? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
I don't know. If he was, then he would be dead.
Unless he was created Unless by the creator, was, like yeah. like Rachel was.
He was created
have a lifespan.
To do
thank you, voiceover
replicant, detective.
Now, from judging again from the final cut, the ones that get extended life are the ones from that we don't find that out until 2049. So
okay, so the test subject Leon, played by Brian James, who is in The Fifth Element,
very very cool.
Shoots Holden on the second question, blows him away. And Bryant basically wants Deckard to retire Leon and the three other Nexus 6 replicants, Roy Batty, played by Rucker Hauer, Zora, played by Joanna Cassidy, and Pris, played by Daryl Hannah.
This Quattro is now the
fourth movie we've done with Daryl Hannah.
She's much more dynamic in this
one. It's not the fourth movie.
Okay.
It is.
Grumpy Old Men.
Boom, one.
High Spirits.
Boom, two.
We did another one. No, we did another one, didn't we? Because weren't you complaining about it when I picked High Spirits? That was the third one?
This is the third one.
Okay, fine.
She's up there with Rachel Tinkerton and John Malkovich for the most in quad pro quo. Right,
also,
most prestigious.
Crazy.
Zora, played by Joanna Cassidy. She is Christina Applegate's boss in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Mm-hmm. Just putting that out there. Amazing. So Bryant has Deckard meet with the CEO of the company that creates...
Rutger Hauer is also Hobo with a shotgun for anybody that needs that.
Yes, also. Yes, amazing. Okay. So Bryant has Deckard meet with the CEO of the company that creates the replicants, Eldon Tyrell, played by Joe Turkel. He is also the bartender in The Shining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said that and I was like...
I thought that guy was the devil.
Fun fact, the end of this movie where you see like the mountainscapes... is unused footage from The Shining.
That's funny.
You didn't see that in your version.
So you don't see the car driving like the little beetle, but it's unused mountain footage from The Shining.
I'll boot up the HD DVD player and I'll show it to you.
So basically, he goes to see Eldon so he can administer the test on the Nexus 6 to see if it works. Tyrell expresses his interest in seeing the test fail first and asks him to administer it on his assistant, Rachel, played by Sean Young. Do you want to say something?
He found Captain Winky!
So bad that I refer to her as Lieutenant Einhorn.
Like, Einhorn is a man.
And she had a banging career in the
80s.
But also, unfortunately...
She kind of ruined it for herself.
It was kind of her own undoing. Like, yeah, when she tried to...
She chose her roles.
She tried to be... She was like the next big thing.
She had a big career in the 80s, and then she fucked it up with the whole Batman thing.
Yeah, when she was trying to be Catwoman. It was weird. And then she just like went full on crazy.
I think she had maybe a little bit of mental health issues. Unfortunately, also back then, like, when women messed up, they didn't get... sort of the same now. They don't really get second chances.
It's nice to see somebody that doesn't buckle under the pressure.
After a much longer than a standard test, it takes a long time for Rachel, Deckard concludes privately to Tyrell that Rachel is a replicant who doesn't know she's a replicant. How can you not know? How could she not know?
This is one of my favorite scenes, this one.
Yeah, Tyrell, she almost tricks him.
Yeah.
Are you trying... Also, is this trying to test me if I'm a replicant or a lesbian? And
also, her outfit and hair are flawless in this movie. She looks awesome.
I don't like her hair in this
Ooh,
scene.
I like it. It's like very like 1940s femme fatale.
It looks like... She's got like this Project porcelain Runway. Skin.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
She looks like a doll.
When she takes her hair down and it's all like curly and fluffy.
I like that. I like that look.
She's stunning.
She does an incredible job. I'm sure it's incredibly hard to portray a robot because you can't make any sort of...
Especially, yeah.
You have to like have emphasis on certain words, but that's really it. Your facial expressions aren't there.
And how do you smoke that many cigarettes?
But she's...
not cough? But because you're also a fucking robot, okay?
She's doing like both. She's playing a robot who thinks she's human, who doesn't know she's a robot. So it's like a dual thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's...
Very cool.
She just has this flat affect.
Yeah. So Tyrell explains that she's an experiment who has been given false memories to provide an emotional cushion, and that she has no knowledge of her true nature. She also isn't limited to the four-year lifespan of the other replicants.
Yeah, they're easier to control once you give them that buffer of fake memories.
Mm-hmm. I wrote a short story in college that was similar to this.
Yeah, we found that out in 2049.
Okay,
I've been watching a lot of The Circle, and they actually have an artificial intelligence playing a character in The Circle.
Oh!
And
does he say it's a circle?
It's a circle.
This is some garbage TV. I want you to know.
His responses fucking terrible. Are much like hers. Like they have emphasis on different syllables.
Wait, this is
he has learned how to like survive in the game, and he actually beats them.
Mm. Oh, so this,
I only know this from Trixie and Katya.
So this isn't the when she's talking about this when Tammy's talking about The Circle. It
the
isn't.
Netflix
it's not the Tom Hanks.
It's a TV show, and not the one time Tom Hanks played a bad guy.
Yeah, no.
In a movie
with Emma Watson. No. Okay.
Okay. All right.
No, it's far worse than that.
Okay. 2049.
Deckard goes to search Leon's hotel room, and he finds.
Dildos.
Like photos and a scale from the skin of an animal, which is later identified as a synthetic snake scale. There's not really any animals,
that
which
is,
in the book,
yeah, that's a,
was the theme of the book. Basically, animals are extinct.
Yeah, okay? you buy like trying to buy like they had like Kelly Blue Book for.
They
actual,
reference it in the movie.
Yeah.
She, like, when they go and see Zora, which we'll get to, it's like, is that real? She's like, you think I'd be dancing here if I could afford a real snake? Like, so Deckard returns to his apartment where Rachel is waiting. She tries to prove her humanity by showing him a family photo, but Deckard reveals that her memories are implants, so totally blows up Tyrell's.
It's such a sad scene.
It too. Is. They're implants from Tyrell's niece, and she leaves in tears.
Well, yeah, she's just been... She went there with proof. Look, I'm not a fucking robot. And then he goes, oh, yeah, what about this and this? Does this sound familiar?
What about when
Harrison Ford just ruining people's lives. I mean, that's just what he does.
What about when your brother wanted to play doctor and you chickened out?
Well, I mean, imagine how she feels.
I mean, sad. Yeah, sad. So, replicants Roy, Rucker Hauer, and Leon. And I would just like to describe Rucker Hauer, okay? He is... tall and has white blonde hair and is just very yummy. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Just looks like an old white guy. I don't know what the big fuck
he's not
is.
Old.
The replicants are like different version, like iterations of replicants. Like Leon is like an industrial like loader guy. He's basically the human forklift.
Yeah, not a linguist.
Replicants right now.
Pris Daryl Hannah is like I forget what she was,
but she's like a hooah.
She's like a sex doll.
No, that's
Zora. Yeah.
Zora is the sex doll. Pris is like the nanny doll or something like that. I think she takes care of kids or is like...
Oh, and Roy Batty's what?
And Roy Batty is a soldier.
Yeah, okay. All right.
He's like the military one.
Rucker Hauer, been in a lot of storied career.
Lady Hawk.
Lady Hawk. I always remember he... So there was this... It was
an old net.
Remember when NBC used to do like...
Quad pro quo alum, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
Vampire
Buffy
Slayer.
He's in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. Remember when like the ABC, CBS, NBC used to do like miniseries, and they weren't like a show, but it was like Sleeping Beauty, and they were like fairy tale themed or something weird like that. They did one like Alice in Wonderland or something. So there was this one on NBC years ago that was called The Tenth Kingdom, and it was all fairy tale stuff. And Rucker Hauer was in it, and he played like the woodsman, like that the evil queen hires to hunt down this like girl. And I just always, and my mom was obsessed with it because of Rucker Hauer being in it. I love it's. It's a really
good show.
Did
he say anything about Tears in the Rain?
No, he didn't. But he looked good.
My dad had.
Oh, he was in Batman.
Yeah, he was in Batman Begins.
He was in Batman Begins.
He was the one that fired Morgan Freeman and was like, "Didn't you get the memo?" And
I was like excited that he was having like a career resurgence.
And then at the end of the movie, Morgan Freeman clapped him back with, "Didn't you get the memo?" My dad had a VHS of like this movie that either became a TV show or was a TV show made into a movie. Called Wanted, Dead or Alive, and Rutger Hauer was on the cover of it.
You talk about my it's so mom weird.
I didn't think he did
taste.
Anything after Hobo with a Shotgun.
Oh God!
Well, when disgusting. You when you
he
achieve,
had a career after that.
When you achieve a well, Hobo with a Shotgun was like right after Batman Begins.
Oh, uh-huh.
So he peaked right there.
And on a downward spiral after Batman Begins, Hobo with a Shotgun was in the gully. For
No. Batman Begins was like. The summit before the peak that was Hobo with a Shotgun.
Okay.
Again, I say that the speech he gives in Hobo with a Shotgun
about the bear
is almost Tears or Rain.
It's almost as good as Tears in the Rain.
Okay. Mm. So Roy and Leon investigate a replicant eye manufacturing laboratory.
See?
Who works there?
You see, this is what really pisses
me off.
These replicants come into my place and they fuck up my shit and then they kill me.
Another
amazing pisses me off.
Performance.
James Hong.
He's in the Green-Eyed Women.
He's in everything. Did you see he showed up at a con last month dressed as...
Old Lopan?
Oh, he's getting real weird with it. Good for him.
He's like 92 at this point. Yeah. He's amazing.
We looked it up.
His first movie...
He's still acting.
His first movie was with Clark Gable. That's how old he is.
He wants to still produce and direct.
Amazing. I love that for him.
If
I
he
love
can,
it.
Go for it.
Yes. We looked up his whole career. He does mostly voiceovers now for cartoons.
Well, he was in...
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
No, right. But most of his stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's tough. Yeah. So they learn J.F. Sebastian, who's played by William Sanderson, a gifted genetic designer who worked closely with Tyrell.
Is that a horse?
Little Sebastian?
Oh, sorry.
Pris, Daryl Hannah, crazy hair, locates Sebastian and manipulates him to gain his trust. This entire relationship really freaks me out. Like, it's gross. I feel like it's weirdly similar to, like...
Do you like our owl?
No, the... What's that movie that... With Natalie Portman and Jean Reno?
The Professional.
I feel like they're both, like, mentally a little bit young. And don't know who's taking advantage of who at this point. Like, it's just...
So it's mutual.
And then all the dolls and the movement and, like, it's like a creepy, weird circus in that house. And I don't like it.
It's an aesthetic.
And she moves. She's all bendy. I don't like it. So a photograph from Leon's apartment and the snake scale led Deckard to a strip club where Zora works. So that's Joanna Cassidy. Fun fact, she was not scared of that snake because it was her own pet. It was a Burmese python, and it was hers. After a confrontation and chase, which...
We also see,
so you see titties.
Yep,
titties.
It's a boobies.
Woo! And sparkles.
They're built for
sparkles.
Speed.
They're great, yeah.
They're built for speed, and water bounces off of them because of her raincoat.
She used to run through the streets and basically nothing.
It's a transparent umbrella worn as a jacket, and she's got, like, an alien face hugger around her tits.
Yes.
It's bizarre.
Very crazy. So after a confrontation and a chase, Deckard kills Zora. We get this great, like, crash through a glass slow-mo amazingness.
Yeah.
So
that's when the movie pretends to be a noir again.
A little bit, yeah. Bryant also orders him to retire Rachel, Sean Young, who has disappeared from the Tyrell Corporation. Deckard spots Rachel in a crowd, but he is ambushed by Leon, who knocks the gun out of Deckard's hand and beats him. As Leon is about to kill Deckard, Rachel saves him by using Deckard's gun to kill Leon.
Good,
so
Rachel.
Now Leon's dead. Zora's dead.
Do you know that gun is like one of the most like counterfeited movie prop now?
No.
Because like apparently...
I mean, I do now.
People would just steal it from set, or like Harrison Ford would lose it and then people made replicas of it, made replicants basically, and would just sell it online. Well, not online, but I mean like through like collectors and stuff like that.
Have you ever seen that interview? I know I've talked about this before, but it's hilarious. So it was when 2049 came out, and she's now the host of the Great British Baking Show. Her name's Allison. She's like a larger, like, black woman, British. And she's interviewing Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling. And, you know, Harrison Ford is notoriously the worst interviewee in history, yeah, other than Robert De Niro. And so she's like, she's loud, she's funny, she's hilarious. And she brought them these like glasses that like looked like the glasses from the original movie. And he's like, oh, thanks. And Ryan Gosling's like, so you like the original? She's like, I've never seen it. And just starts cracking up. And they all just start cracking up. And then they just start drinking together. It's the funniest interview ever. She actually gets Harrison Ford to smile and laugh, which I've never seen anyone be able to do. So.
Yeah, because the funniest thing, I know we touched on it earlier about how he hates a lot of his legacy, but
he's such an ungrateful piece of shit.
But literally, but I'm sorry, like,
exactly. I just don't get. Really, I love his movies, but I hate the way he treats people about his movies.
He just doesn't want to be famous.
He loves Indiana Jones because he's a producer on it and he gets a back end on it. So of course he's going to keep coming back for those. I mean, I know you said at the beginning of this how like him and Ridley Scott like came to head to head about it, but I do recall maybe he was just bullshitting during the press junket for 2049, but this is one of his characters that he said he eventually did like.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and they're friends now.
And then also, like,
but it's also been like 40 years.
And then also with the whole, like, during 2049, there was, you know, the 4-year consideration style, like, rumors that he was getting Oscar buzz for playing Deckard in that movie.
No.
For best supporting.
No.
I thought he was.
Okay. So Rachel killed Leon, and then her and Deckard, they go back to his apartment, and they fuck.
Well, she plays the piano first.
Plays the piano, and then he...
And then he plays the pussy.
Kind of tricks her into fucking him a little bit. I don't know. It was bizarre.
It was so strange, because he's like, kiss me.
You want to kiss me.
Tell me.
It was like he was using the force on her.
She's a robot. He was literally telling it what to do.
I know, so it seems a little shady.
And then in the final cut, what Tammy and Guido watched, you could look at it. They tried to make it look like that's where you get the whole Deckard is a replicant thing, because in the camera angle, there's an orange hue in his eyes, which makes you think that he's a replicant also.
He's not a replicant.
Yeah, so that's how you get a robot baby.
Okay. So next, Roy Batty arrives at Sebastian's apartment and tells Pris that the other replicants are dead. Sad. Sebastian reveals that because of a genetic premature aging disorder, because he's weird looking.
Methuselah disorder.
His life will be cut short. And I'm not sure. I only literally know this guy from like an episode of ER, but I know he's been in a lot. But
yeah,
he's in like another famous, like big famous movie or something.
No,
like
he's
that.
A that guy.
He's a that guy. Okay.
But yeah, even you were like, he's not supposed to. Like, when he said how old he was, you're like, he looks way older.
He said he was 26. I'm like, so that's the delusion we're operating under in this movie?
But then literally 30 seconds later, he's like, I got a genetic disorder called Methuselah syndrome.
It makes me look old.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously the replicants only have a 4-year lifespan as well. And Roy's running out of time. So Roy uses Sebastian to gain entrance to Tyrell's penthouse. He demands more life from his maker, which this also... So the scene in Sebastian's apartment gave me big Edward Scissorhands vibes. Like, I just feel like he was so influenced by this. Like, the creator, even though it's not him, but, like, all the parts and the missing and the dolls and the clown. And, like, it just reminded me so much of, like, Vincent Price.
Too much of this.
Yes.
The candle that burns twice as brightly burns twice as quickly, Edward. Let's talk about murder.
Yeah, like it just gave me that vibe. And cookies. So bad. Like tying things together and like, I don't know, it's creepy.
Are you Stewie or?
That's Vincent Price.
It is a little bit Stewie-ish, yeah.
It's so Stewie-ish.
Well, Stewie is from Vincent
Price. I know.
So he demands more life and Tyrell says it's impossible. Roy confesses that he has done questionable things. But Tyrell dismisses this, praising Roy's advanced design and accomplishments in his short life. Roy kisses Tyrell, yum, and then kills him by gouging his eyes out. It's pretty gross.
He...
Crushing his skull.
Yeah, he does...
I know, but he puts his thumbs in his eye sockets. That's what I mean.
He literally does what the Mountain did to Mando. Well, at least in the show. In the books, he smashed his head into the ground.
Sebastian also tries to flee, but I don't think we actually see him die, but he's later reported dead. So then at Sebastian's apartment, Deckard is ambushed by Pris. Lots of acrobatics, not really Daryl Hannah doing it. But he kills her. And she does kind of like a big floppy, you know.
Hey, he doesn't kill her. He retires her.
He retires her. I'm sorry. As Roy returns. Roy's body begins to fail as the end of his lifespan nears. He chases Deckard through the building and onto the roof. Deckard tries to jump onto another roof, really big jump, but is left hanging on the edge. Roy makes the jump with ease. And as Deckard's grip loosens, Roy hoists him onto the roof to save him. Before Roy dies, he laments that his memories will be lost in time like tears in the rain.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears in rain.
Gaff arrives to congratulate Deckard, also reminding him that Rachel will not live, but then again, who does? Also, he has these awesome blue eyes in this movie.
And acne scars.
Well, he always has those.
How do I reach these kids?
But they're like Belichick. They're so blue. Apparently, that was a suggestion by Rucker Hauer, was for him to wear those blue contacts.
What about the origami?
That's the final cut. Again, that's the final cut.
No, he does it in this one too. Yeah, we so see the little up. Unicorn, the little unicorn origami. So Deckard returns to his apartment to retrieve Rachel. While escorting her to the elevator, he notices a small origami unicorn on the floor. He recalls Gaff's words and departs with Rachel.
And then he does a voiceover saying, hey, yes. Guess what? Tyrell told me that she had unlimited lifespan.
Yes.
We're going to go fly through the countryside that might have been in another movie. I don't know. Yes.
So then we get overhead shots of the Colorado wilderness. They're making their way to the Overlook Hotel. This is just a Shining prequel. The end.
Yeah, I'm sure she's a lively lay. Fucking understated robot porcelain doll face.
Well, he probably also took her virginity. Her robot virginity.
Her cherry.
All right. Well, fun facts. Oh, well, should we ask the questions?
Yeah, what are the questions,
whatever
man?
You want to...
About my mom.
Oh, yeah, you go with it.
Okay.
The questions were...
Okay.
When did you first see this movie... Did you see it in theaters?
So, my mom says she cannot remember when she first saw it, but I guarantee you she probably saw it in theaters because I don't know when she would have seen it. Like, it came out in 82. She probably dragged my dad to it. My older brother would have just been born, so I'm assuming they got me to watch Jeff and they went to the movies. But she couldn't remember if she saw it in the theater, but she's pretty sure she did.
Why did you pick this movie?
Well, first answer was she loves sci-fi. Second, Rucker Hauer.
What is your favorite scene in the movie?
So her favorite scene is anything with Rucker Hauer.
More than one.
Specifically the end. But also she likes the scene where Harrison Ford does the big long test with Sean Young.
I like that scene too.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Did you let us, meaning your kid, watch this movie? When did you let them watch it?
I don't remember watching it as a kid. I don't think my mom would have not let us watch it because she let us watch a lot of stuff. But I don't remember watching it with her. Okay. So basically every answer from my mother was Rucker Hauer. So all of my fun facts are Rucker Hauer related.
Okay.
Rucker Hauer came up with many inventive ideas for his character, like the moment where he grabs and fondles a dove. Not sure where that dove came from.
Prince.
Is that at the end?
Yes.
He got it.
Just like holding a dove.
Prince literally was on set because...
Just throwing doves at people?
Purple Rain was happening right over there, and he was just like... And Rucker Hauer was like, can I have one?
Can I have a dove? He also improvised the now iconic line, all those moments will be lost in time. Not the entire thing is improvised. It's just this line. But all those moments will be lost in time like tears in the rain. He later chose all those moments as the title of his autobiography. Originally, Roy Batty was to have a lengthy monologue just prior to his death. Rucker Hauer felt the text was too technical. He had no bearing to the film and referred to locations with which the audience would be unfamiliar. So in the night before filming, without telling Ridley Scott, Howard removed much of the monologue, kept the places he liked, and then added the last two lines. After they finished filming the scene with Rucker Howard's version, the crew members applauded, and some of them were even moved to tears.
Aww.
Ridley Scott then punched him in the
face. It was sad.
So Philip K. Dick personally approved of Rucker Howard, describing him as the perfect baddie, cold, Aryan, flawless. Ridley Scott cast Rucker Howard in the role of Roy Batty without ever meeting him. He saw him in a movie previously and wanted him. All right.
He was also thirsty.
Uh-huh. Due to an imminent strike amongst the actors and actresses near the end of principal photography, this, again, long hours, constant rewrites, the studio, they filmed the last scene or the end of the movie the day before the studio was going to remove Ridley Scott as the director. He also, you should know, was the original director of Dune and left because that production was going too slow, apparently.
They used what he made. It was very nice.
So due to an imminent strike, the shooting schedule became extremely long and rushed to complete this movie. Two stunt doubles for Rucker Howard's jump at the end had been injured while trying to do that jump during the movie's climax. So Howard asked for the gap to be tightened a bit, and he successfully performed the jump himself. When filming his death scene after 25 hours of shooting, Howard was so exhausted that he excused himself, went back to his hotel, and collapsed. When he returned to the set the next day, after a decent sleep, the strike had been averted. Howard was able to finish his scenes properly and even came up with his famous death monologue. This is like the equivalent of Robert Shaw's speech in Jaws. Like, he was fucking wasted, and then Spielberg was like, "Get your shit together, or we're not having this in the scene in the movie." And then he came back and did it in one take.
All right, I'll do it. All right,
fine. I won't drink today.
Fine.
This was Rucker Howard's favorite of his own movies.
Really? Aww.
Yeah.
Did a great job.
More than Lady Hawk?
More than you just. You know, you were like, more than Hobo with a Shotgun?
No.
Stupid ass movie.
Low hanging fruit.
Disgusting.
Whoa.
Rucker Howard bought a yacht with part of the salary he made on this movie. He christened his ship the Blade Runner.
That's some BDE right there.
Yeah. In real life, Rucker Howard died the same year as his character in 2019.
Aww.
Though in a different month, July instead of November.
Time to
and
die.
And that is Rucker Howard, a.k.a. Blade Runner, the theatrical cut.
All these moments will be lost in time.
All right.
Hobo with a shotgun.
Around the room, pass, fail. Tammy, would you like to go?
Pass.
Lovely. Short and sweet.
Yep. It was good.
Guido.
Very pass. It's okay. Peak aesthetic. I love this movie.
Amazing. Amazing. Matt.
Yeah, you know, even though it was the theatrical cut, and yes, it was. I would love to show you the final cut.
I'll watch it again.
Yeah, yeah. I'll show you the final cut. I think it's much better, but still, the subject, like, the basis of what made the final cut great is still in this movie. Hell yeah, mega pass.
Passes all around.
It's my second favorite Rucker Howard movie.
Said no one ever.
It's true. Well, it was between this and So I Married an Axe Murderer, so.
Heat!
These are my mother's choices. All right, well, we are going to continue Mother Lover Yay. Month.
Mother Lover.
Matt. Quid pro quo.
My mom's pick came out in 1974, starring Gene Wilder, Peter Boyle, Madeline Kahn, Terry Garr, Cloris Leachman, directed by Mel Brooks. You know it. You love it. It's Young Frankenstein. And where can you watch it? You know, you used to be able to stream it wherever you could, but guess what? You can't now. I'm sorry. You're going to have to buy a physical copy of it. Yeah. I know millennials cringe and shake, but seriously, buy this movie and watch it.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful. We are at Quad Pro Quo Pod across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you want to suggest a theme month like we're doing Mother Lover Month, you can message us on social media or submit via our website. And please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. Give us a positive review. And until next week, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.